Hi everyone, my name is Dr. Matt Matisar. I'm an attending physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, member of our lymphoma and adult bone marrow transplant services. And I'm looking forward today to speak with you about the role of PET response and PET adaptive therapy in the management of classical Hodgkin lymphoma. Let's begin. Over this next stretch of time, I'm going to be speaking about data in both newly diagnosed patients with classical Hodgkin lymphoma, both early stage and advanced stage disease, as well as patients with relapsed Hodgkin lymphoma, focusing specifically on the role for PET in guiding therapeutic decision-making for patients with Hodgkin's. Let's start with patients that have newly diagnosed classical Hodgkin lymphoma identified at early stage. What here is the role for PET in guiding decision-making? Some of the key data that we'll be looking at are focusing on recent clinical trials that help us better understand how to use functional imaging in managing our patients. One important study for patients with early stage classical Hodgkin lymphoma is the study that's known as the RAPID trial, aptly named because it focuses on the ability of delivering a rapid or foreshortened course of chemotherapy for select patients. In this study, patients with early stage more favorable classical Hodgkin lymphoma were identified and received three cycles of traditional chemotherapy in the form of ABVD, doxorubicin, bleomycin, vinblastine, and dacarbazine, and subsequently underwent restaging imaging with an 18-FDG PET scan. Based upon the response by PET after these 3 months or three cycles of ABVD chemotherapy, next steps in the patient care were determined. For patients who had a PET-negative response, and here, PET negative is defined as a score of either Deauville 1 or Deauville 2. And we'll be speaking more about Deauville scoring later on in this talk. Patients who had a PET negative response by those relatively stringent criteria subsequently were randomized to either being told that's all the treatment you need or receiving what we would say consolidative radiation therapy with a dose of 30 gray to the involved field where the disease was initially. There was also what to do with patients if their PET was still positive at this point. These patients went on to receive additional treatment in the form of a fourth month of chemotherapy and radiation. But I want to focus on the PET negative arm here for this discussion. Reminding us what the Deauville scoring is all about, we know that a score of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 represent these different findings on a PET scan. Traditionally, a score of 1 or 2 is always defined as negative, and a score of 4 or 5 is always defined as positive. Various studies decide what to do with a Deauville 3, which is a sort of an in-between result. Here in the RAPID trial, given that they were giving quite minimized therapy, they selected the most stringent PET results, which is only a Deauville 1 or 2. Eligibility for this trial, we're looking at histologically confirmed classical Hodgkin lymphoma, early stage disease by CT. Interestingly, baseline PETs were not mandated or always available. Patients could neither have bulky disease nor the so-called B symptoms of drenching night sweats, unexplained fever, or weight loss of greater than 10% of body weight without alternate explanation. Had to be previously untreated and had to agree to the study. What we see is that in the PET-negative patients, the results were outstanding whether or not consolidated radiation therapy was administered. From the upper left here, in the intent to treat progression-free survival curves, you see that there is no statistically significant difference in progression-free survival whether or not consolidative therapy was given. And most importantly, in terms of overall survival, there is absolutely no difference in terms of a statistical measurement between the survival patients whether or not they received radiation therapy. This is important because it gives us justification for minimizing the exposure of patients to radiation treatment that can have both short and long-term consequences for their well-being, justifying 3 months of therapy alone in a select group of patients. Here is a second study with a slightly different design, but also giving quite important data to us as practicing clinicians looking to manage our patients. In the CALGB study, patients started by receiving 2 months of ABVD and then having an interim PET or a PET 2. Patients who had a PET negative response at that time went on to receive 2 more months for a total of 4 cycles of ABVD without radiation therapy. Importantly, for the CALGB study, PET negative is defined as Deauville 1, 2, or 3, meaning that fewer patients will be classified as being PET positive, and fewer patients will thus be exposed to escalated therapy, including radiation treatment. Shown here is the results for patients who were either PET negative at the 2-month mark or PET positive at the 2-month mark. And you see that for the PET negative curve, despite the fact that they did not go on to receive consolidated radiotherapy, the results are quite outstanding at a relatively early median follow-up time for progression-free survival. PET positive patients who had escalated treatment to a more intensified chemotherapy regimen and escalated BICOP with radiation therapy, having a progression-free survival of 60% is quite favorable, better than you would expect with ABVD completion alone with or without radiation treatment, suggesting that there may be a role for intensification in this patient population when they have an adverse PET at the end of 2 months of ABVD. Something important for us to remember is that there's a nice set of data from the CLGB study showing that the presence of B symptoms at time of diagnosis, even in the modern era, remains prognostically adverse, and it's important for us to remember that such patients really should not receive ultra-minimized therapy, and the standard at Memorial is for such patients to really receive full-course therapy as if they were to have advanced stage disease. The third trial that I'd like to talk about for early stage Hodgkin lymphoma is the set of trials known as the H10 trial or trials, which split patients into either favorable or unfavorable risk strata. And again, 2 months of ABVD chemotherapy administered for patients that were randomized to the experimental approach, if they were PET negative, went on to receive chemotherapy alone without radiation therapy. Patients PET positive were escalated to the intensified escalated BICOP approach, and all would go on to receive radiation. Looking at the interim PET-positive patients, patients who were escalated to BICOP as opposed to completing ABVD, we see that the use of a more intensified chemotherapy approach for such patients was associated with improvement in progression-free survival quite dramatically. And even here, there is a trend towards overall survival benefits with a p-value of 0.06, not yet achieving statistical significance, but approaching it. And many of us expect these results to continue to diverge as the data set matures, meaning that there may be a true survival benefit for escalated therapy for patients with an adverse PET at the end of 2 cycles of ABVD chemotherapy, even with advanced stage, even with early stage disease. In conclusion, for early stage Hodgkin lymphoma that is newly diagnosed, we can use PET in a couple ways. Number one, we can use it to identify patients who may be able to receive less therapy, meaning chemotherapy alone, 3 or 4 cycles of ABVD, and exclude radiation therapy safely. And we may be able to identify patients who may benefit from a more intensified approach, despite having an early stage Hodgkin lymphoma diagnosis that is traditionally associated with excellent overall outcomes. One challenge that we in the lymphoma community are going to face over these next years is what to do with patients who receive minimized therapy as their first-line treatment and then go on to experience a relapse. Traditionally, relapsed classical Hodgkin lymphoma is managed with intensified chemotherapy approaches and autologous stem cell transplantation. One wonders whether all patients who relapse after minimized first-line therapy really require such an intensive second approach, and this is a question that we in the research community are actively trying to answer in the present tense. Going on to advanced stage classical Hodgkin lymphoma, what here do we know about the role for PET scan in guiding decision making? First, I'd like to call attention to the so-called RAFL trial, which was recently reported in the New England Journal of Medicine. This is a very important study, both in and of itself, as well as contextualizing further decision-making and cross-trial comparisons as treatments continue to evolve. Here, patients received 2 months of ABVD chemotherapy for advanced stage disease and underwent a PET reimaging, PET2. Patients who had a negative PET2, here defined with the more broad criteria, again, of a Deauville 1, 2, or 3 score, were subsequently randomized to complete the 6 months of ABVD chemotherapy as would be standard, or to de-escalate, exclude bleomycin from the next four cycles, and give AVD, ABVD minus the B, for 4 months, and then follow up those patients subsequently. Essentially asking the question of, if you have an interim PET that is negative, can you exclude bleomycin and thus minimize the risk of bleomycin pulmonary toxicity, which is one of the most feared complications of ABVD chemotherapy? Answer from Ratho is yes. Can exclude bleomycin safely if you achieve a DOVA 1 through 3 PET negative interim PET scan. We see here that there is a minimal difference in progression-free survival and absolutely no difference in overall survival, justifying this, and this truly has been practice-changing data and is a standard of care right now for advanced-stage Hodgkin lymphoma. So that's a de-escalation approach. Do we have any data regarding escalation of therapy for PET-positive patients? There are data from the RAFL trial as well that I'm not showing here, but I want to look more carefully at the SWOG data. This is a trial that looked at PET2 and was designed to analyze the role for intensification to escalate a BICOP and see whether you can intensify treatment exposure in this group of patients and alter subsequent outcomes. We know from historical data that progression-free survival rates of patients who are interim PET2 positive and go on to complete ABVD chemotherapy alone are quite poor. Some estimates in the 20 to 40% range in terms of progression-free survival at 3 years. Here in the SWOG data, we see that intensification of these patients to escalated BICOP to complete chemotherapy achieves a progression-free survival approximately 60%. This is quite attractive and gives reasonable substantiation for the consideration of escalated BICOP in select patients. Important to remember that escalated BICOP is toxic therapy. It is challenging treatment. It cannot be safely administered to elderly patients, and it has associated with a number of both short and long-term risks, including but not limited to severe myelosuppression, gonadotoxicity, and so on, as well as a small but real rate of treatment-related MDS or AML. So these are decisions that we don't make lightly, but knowing that a PET2-positive patient has a very high risk of relapse and subsequent exposure to second-line therapy and stem cell transplant, the ability to avoid such second-line approaches with intensification of first-line treatment is attractive. In summary, patients who are interim PET negative after two cycles of ABVD can go on to complete ABVD chemotherapy with the omission of bleomycin. And patients who are PET2 positive, it is a reasonable consideration to escalate appropriate patients to escalate a BICOP to overcome this adverse finding. There's a lot of questions that we're going to face moving forward in how to best treat advanced-stage Hodgkin lymphoma in the era of PET-adapted therapy. Number one, we need to better understand the long-term impact of escalated therapy. We see that it improves progression-free survival. It's important for us to be confident that we're actually changing the natural history of the illness with that intensification and not merely delaying the inevitable. Overall survival data are still maturing in these studies and are very important to us to characterize this intervention. We have new data regarding a novel chemotherapy regimen with replacement of bleomycin with brentuximab vedotin. This is the so-called Echelon 1 trial. And we see that the substitution of bleo for brentuximab vedotin does improve to a very modest degree progression-free survival with no differences in overall survival. Some of that benefit is associated with or attributable to bleomycin pulmonary toxicity. The study was designed and conducted pre-RAFL, and whether the results are as meaningful in the era where we're using PET scans to minimize bleomycin exposure and thus bleopulmonary toxicity, this is an important question for us as a community to better understand. And lastly, as we continue to develop novel first-line therapies, whether it's inclusion of bleomycin, inclusion of brentuximab or other treatments such as checkpoint inhibitors, how can we best leverage the importance and the biological insight of PET response and PET adaptive therapy as we design these next generation regimens? Let's turn our attention now to the management of relapsed classical Hodgkin lymphoma. and see what, if any, role we have here for the use of PET to guide decision making. First, we have very important data to show us that the quality of the response to so-called salvage therapy, as measured by functional imaging with PET scan, is very powerfully predictive of cure rates and outcomes after a consolidative stem cell transplant. Both in terms of overall survival and event-free survival, we see that patients who are PET negative going into a transplant do much better than patients who are PET positive going into that transplant. With that in mind, can we use this understanding to guide the design of less toxic and more rational salvage therapeutic approaches? One approach that my colleague Allison Moskowitz has taken on is to try to use a staged approach for second-line therapy for classical Hodgkin lymphoma, where brentuximab vedotin is given as monotherapy for 2 months, 2 cycles of intensified dosing schedule of brentuximab vedotin, and then patients undergo restaging PET scan. For patients who are PET negative, either Deauville 1 or 2, go directly to stem cell collection and consolidative autologous stem cell transplant. Whereas patients who had a Deauville 3, 4, or 5 go on to receive a more traditional cytotoxic approach. Here, the regimen that we prefer in these patients is a program we call augmented ICE. It is the ICE chemotherapy program with dose intensification of etoposide and ifosfamide. Be that as it may, it's second line cytotoxic therapy to try to achieve a PET negative response prior to transplant. Overall, this two-step approach was able to achieve a PET negative complete response either after the brentuximab alone or after ICE, and 27%, approximately 1 in 4, were able to go directly to transplant without needing second-line cytotoxic therapy. Brentuximab vedotin in the second line is very potent treatment, with the majority of patients having some clinical benefit in terms of response to the agent. Shown here is the waterfall plot with an overlay of PET responses, showing you where the Deauville 1 or 2 fall out versus the 3, 4, and 5. 45 patients were treated with brentuximab vedotin, and you see here the distribution of their Deauville scores. For the 3 through 5, they went on to get augmented ICE, and again were repetted afterwards. And you see here that the majority achieved a Deauville score of 1 or 2 after ICE, even after not achieving a satisfactory response to brentuximab monotherapy. Regardless of what it took to get them there, if they were PET negative after brentuximab alone or PET negative after brentuximab plus augmented ICE, did not matter in terms of the event-free survival after transplant. What matters is achieving the complete response, not the selection of therapy to get you there. And this has been a theme that we've seen across the salvage Hodgkin lymphoma literature, but it holds up even now in the modern era of using targeted therapy and immunotherapy in the treatment of Hodgkin's disease. So in conclusion, as we saw in the treatment of newly diagnosed classical Hodgkin lymphoma, you can use PET response to guide the selection of appropriate salvage treatment, and a strategy such as a staged approach of using brentuximab alone rather than using standard cytotoxic regimens as the first salvage approach can allow us to minimize the exposure of patients to additional cytotoxic and thus toxic treatment. There are opportunities moving forward here that are important for us to consider as a community. Number one, can we go on and further reduce the toxicity of salvage approaches in those who do have a PET negative response to treatment? And on the flip side, for patients who do not achieve an adequate PET response to salvage, whether it's targeted therapy or cytotoxic therapy, should we be taking those patients to transplant, or should they be shunted down other therapeutic pathways, such as moving them on to checkpoint inhibitor therapy, immunotherapy, or other approaches, rather than taking them through a traditional auto transplant? Thank you very much for viewing this activity with me today, and thank you for your attention.